Hey, this is Mike Bobbitt. I'm a guy who used to make things, and sometimes I still do. These days, I prefer making podcasts, and I have a new one called Soundtrack to My Life. On this podcast, I talk to different creative people about the music that shaped them. Sometimes the conversations are funny, and sometimes they're just kind of sweet.
I love that Pina Colada song. Yeah, I do.
Rihanna has had a huge impact on my songwriting.
I'm diving into the ocean, finding that one fish that has the toxins, and I'm just drinking those toxins all day.
Maybe they're saying, like, you should now go forth and rock. It's like a peace be with you situation.
I also have a playlist called F-Jams. One and two, just in case.
We danced to a jazz version of My Favorite Things.
Soundtrack to My Life. It's available exclusive on Spotify. It's a exclusive. I'm going to try to make that word take off. It's a music plus talk show, meaning I can play songs in their entirety. So think of this as an interactive playlist with some of the coolest creative people I know, and you should know too. Soundtrack to My Life, a Spotify exclusive.
Welcome back to Great Lakes Confidential. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Angie. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Fantastic.
All right. So, you still feeling good about being back on the show?
Oh, heck yeah. It's been a blast.
We're getting some good feedback and some good numbers, too. So, I'm happy about it. So, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah. So, today, we're going to talk about Sault Ste. Marie.
Oh, yeah.
So we've been talking, like, I think you and I have pretty much been talking about doing a show on the Sioux since, like, the beginning of time. You know, we talk about it and then nothing happens. And I think part of the reason why I haven't done anything with that show idea is because there's so much to be done.
Right. I mean, it's Michigan's oldest city.
Yeah. And it becomes really overwhelming to me. So we're going to try to get into it today. It's not going to be, obviously, like, a full comprehensive look at Sault Ste. Marie.
The Sioux in a nutshell.
Yes. A very small, like a peanut shell. So yeah, but there's some really cool stuff. There's a ton of history, obviously. So we'll just kind of tiny nutshell. So
yeah. Start with the nutshell.
Yes. Did you know that Sault Ste. Marie is one of only six cities within Chippewa County?
It makes sense, yes.
Isn't that crazy, though?
Yeah, it is when you think about it. But, I mean, now, what is it? Like, yeah, Sault Ste. Marie, does Bay Mills count as a city?
Like, Bay Mills.
Kinross? Like, I mean, yep. There's very small little cities and a whole lot of, like, unincorporated areas around there.
Yeah, so the others are Kinross Charter Township, Drummond, mm-hmm. Brimley, Bay Mills, and Detour Village.
Oh, yeah, Detour Village. Yeah, we were there before. That's where you take the little ferry over to Drummond Island.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when you drive along the coast there, along the St. Mary's River.
Yes. My uncle lived on, did he live on Drummond? Or, yeah, he lived on Drummond Island for a little while.
Okay.
So, according to the 2020 census, there were 13,337 people living in Sault Ste. Marie. Behind Marquette, it is the second most populated city in the Upper Peninsula. As you already said, it's also the oldest city in Michigan. The first French explorers passed through in 1622, yeah. Finding the area to be the center of Native American life in the Upper Great Lakes.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I find so fascinating about Sault Ste. Marie is before there was an America, before there was a Canada, Sault Ste. Marie was already, like, you know, as close to a metropolis as you possibly could be in those times, I imagine. Like, it was the crossroads already.
Yeah.
For a lot of people.
1622, like, was the 1600s, was that, like, was it 1600s or 1700s, the Salem witch trials?
Oh, geez, I think that was 1700s, 18th century.
Okay.
Am I right? I don't know. I could be
so,
wrong.
So that's like my, that's like one of my frame of references for like history.
Yeah.
So to think that there was like a city basically in 1622 in our state, and it wasn't a state.
Right.
That's just crazy to me.
Right, and the fact that the two same Sault Ste. Marie's have basically been the same city throughout history up until, you know, we decided there was an America and there was a Canada on either side.
Yeah. Again, as you said, Sault Ste. Marie is located on the St. Mary's River, and across the river is Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, Canada, which is actually larger than our Sault Ste. Marie.
Yeah.
At the time that it was founded in 1668 by Father Jacques Marquette, it was one large city separated by the St. Mary's River. It was split in two when the Upper Peninsula was transferred from Canada to the U.S. in 1797. Long time. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. I don't think Marquette deserves all the credit for finding Sault Ste. Marie. I mean, the Anishinaabe were here before he was for at least 100 years.
Yeah.
Before Marquette or even the French voyagers were here, they called Sault Ste. Marie Bowading was the name. Bowading.
Bowading.
Yeah, it's the Ojibwa word for it. For Sault Ste.
Marie. Oh, interesting.
I hope I'm pronouncing it right. I don't know.
Well, you know, there's a long history on this show of me mispronouncing many, many words. So.
Right. I mean, we're just a couple of dorky Midwestern white people trying to fill in some history facts here. We're going to get some words wrong.
Oh, yeah. Quite a few, actually. I'm notorious for it. So, yeah. And I mean, you know, think about the history of Native Americans in this country anyways. Like, you know, Father Jacques Marquette came along and was like, well, we're just going to go ahead and do this stuff and we're going to split these cities and, you know, we're going to do whatever it is that I want and what my people want. And it's like, these other people have been here for literally over 100 years already.
I mean, the funny part about it is that the Ojibwa pushed out other Indian tribes when they came from the east.
Oh, like did they?
Yeah, they moved from the east because of, you know, the white folks, the Europeans landing east, kind of pushing them eastward. So they migrated east and sort of, you know, like they're like famously, you know, went to war with like the Iroquois nation and all that, who were already here in Michigan before that. And other nations, like the Sioux were pushed further west, you know, into the Dakotas and all that. Yeah. So it is sort of fine. Just the migration of people throughout the centuries, it's, you know, never really going to end. People are always going to keep on moving.
Yeah, that's probably true. So because I didn't want to get into too much of the like history stuff, just because again it's very overwhelming. Unless you do you have more history stuff to add to Sault Ste. Marie?
Oh no, I'm just here to throw in some color with no matter what you say.
Okay. Well, I thought it would be fun to talk about some of the cool things that are in Sault Ste. Marie. One of my favorite things being the Sioux Locks, which...
I mean, you can't not mention the Sioux Locks.
Right. So for people that aren't familiar with the Sioux Locks, this is where ships travel between Lake Superior and then our lower Great Lakes. And they actually have like almost...
stadium. It's like a boat elevator.
Yeah, but they have almost like stadium style
seating. Oh yeah. Oh no, it's definitely like being at a horse race, like when you're up in the grandstand. Yeah.
It's a very cool experience to be able to sit on these essentially cement benches.
It's like like a multi-level, like glassed in. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very good, like an observation deck.
Yeah. And like you could probably fit a good 100 or so people in there. And
oh, more than that.
People from all over the place, different countries, come and watch the Sioux. And you can literally sit there for hours and just watch ships come and go.
I mean, you're like 20 feet away from these gigantic lake freighters as they're coming to a stop and going up and down on this. And, you know, the lock system, if you're not familiar with what a lock is, it's think of it as like an elevator for a boat. Like it moves a boat between two bodies of water that are at two different heights. Like I believe, Lake Superior is like 40 feet higher.
21. There's a 21 foot difference.
Okay. 21 foot difference. 21. Thank you. So, you know, what they do is you go into this little, it kind of, I don't know how to describe it, but anyway,
Like a bay or something.
almost like a little bay, and they close these doors and either flood it with water or drain the water from it so that you're at the even level with whichever body of water you're transferring to. And now maybe it doesn't sound that amazing, but when you're thinking about these boats that are, or these freighters that are how many hundreds of tons,
Yeah.
they and you know, just 1,000 feet long,
It's
and you're
bananas.
just you know, raising it and lowering it like in 15 minutes and getting it on its way. It's insane to me.
It is insane. So what else is kind of insane is like you think about that and you're like, oh, that's cool, I guess. But when you think about like the history of the Sulaks, they were actually open for shipping in May of 1855.
Wow.
So it wasn't until June 18th of 1855 when the first steamer came through. During that first summer, almost 1,500 tons of iron ore came through. 5 years later, it was closer to 120,000 tons.
Wow.
The locks had to be built bigger to accommodate larger boats, and then the newest lock opened in 1968.
That's what I find amazing about the locks too, is that it's not modern technology.
No.
That is not modern technology. That is ancient technology that works just fine.
Yep. So I found some really cool facts about the Sulaks. These are according to Pure Michigan. Number one, 100% of iron ore passes through the locks annually. The value attributed to the iron ore shipped through the locks each year is $500.4 billion.
Every year.
An average of 80 million tons of cargo moves through them each year.
Look at that, like how essential the Sulaks are for the American economy, the Canadian economy, the world economy, really, because you have ships from all over the world going through those locks. Like I sit at work and I have the webcam up for the Sulaks on my computer. I know, I sound like such a dork. It's the closest thing I can get to an aquarium in my office. So I just see these, like, you know, freighters going by all day long, you know, in the Sulaks, out of the locks, and there's like a little chat on the side and people giving the history of the boats and, you know, what flag they're flying, what country they're from. I mean, there's a ship that went through the other day from Liberia, or had like a Liberian flag on it. I mean, maybe that's not that exotic because you can register your ship at different ports for tax reasons and all that, but the fact that we're seeing, you see, you know, freighters going in to our Great Lakes, you know, our backyard, and this whole system accounts for what, like $500 billion in money just being moved about the economy.
Per
It's
year.
per year.
It's crazy.
It just shows you how important that area is.
It is extremely. Number two, 7,000 passages are completed each year. Crews at the Sulaks complete these lockages during the 42-week-long navigations season. They are open 24 hours a day. Also, you can take a personal boat through the locks with permission from the lock master, but your boat has to be motorized.
Yeah, normally don't they make you go on the Canadian side, I believe? Like the American side is for commerce. The Canadian side is like they move a lot more of the little tour boats, and if you were
Okay.
kayaking on the St. Mary's, they'd have you go through the Canadian locks. You don't need to show your passport when you're just going through the locks, because you're just in the water, so that's cool. You don't need to declare anything or anything like that.
Interesting.
So yeah, if you wanted to travel on the St. Mary's.
I think I'd be terrified personally to be raised and lowered in a lock.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
mean that might be fun. The kayaking next to a freighter
Oh.
is what. Yeah, I don't think I could do that.
Nope. Number three, visiting ships travel up to 2,342 miles. Ships from all over the world visit this port as the locks are part of the St. Lawrence Seaway, which connects Duluth, Minnesota to the Atlantic.
Yeah, and I mean Duluth is really the crown jewel of, you know, the Lake Superior shipping. Duluth is, you know, one of the major ports on the lakes.
Yeah.
But without the Sulaks, you wouldn't be able to get to Duluth.
That's true. Doesn't Duluth make underwear for men?
Oh, yeah, that's with Duluth Trading or whatever. I'm like, hey, I like that. I got some slacks from them. They're good slacks.
Number four, 22 million gallons of water are required to traverse a boat. The locks are powered by gravity itself. Water moves in and out of the lock chambers by just opening and closing valves. See, so yeah, like you said, it's not modern technology. This is how they were doing it from 1855 on.
And probably like well before that, you know, it's probably very ancient technology, which is one of those things that always makes me laugh when, you know, they're talking about the pyramids or whatever, and someone always has to pipe up and be like, oh, aliens clearly built that.
Yeah.
Primitive man could not figure that out.
Right.
Primitive man figured out how locks work, and we haven't improved on that technology.
Right.
So shut up.
Number five, the largest boat that comes through is more than 1,000 feet long. There are 13 1,000 footers on the Great Lakes, and the largest boat that comes through the Sioux Locks is the Paul R. Trigurtha. In at 1,013 feet 6 inches, which is larger than 3 football fields. The first vessels on the Great Lakes were 40 foot long canoes.
Yeah.
Those canoes were probably the ones that were full of like pelts and stuff, right?
Like a half ton of beaver pelts and mink pelts and some guy trying to paddle it all back to Quebec.
I cannot imagine.
Yeah. I don't know. I just kind of think that's funny. Like Sault Ste. Marie, like one of the major streets is called Portage Street because before there were locks, that was a portage, you know, where you'd have to take all your stuff out of your boat and carry everything across.
Oh my God.
Like that's what a portage is. It's when you have to, you know, move your boat from like carry your ship, basically your canoe, you know, from one body of water to the next because you can't sail through it.
I can't imagine.
Yeah. So imagine these guys, you know, again with giant bundles of furs.
I'm not built for that life.
No.
No.
I'm going to have it indoors, man.
Number six, it takes 9 hours to pass through. The time between Lake Superior and Lake Huron, it takes a freighter about 9 hours to pass through the St. Mary's River system.
Okay.
Number seven, the locks allow boats to traverse a 20-foot drop. A thick layer of bedrock holds back the waters of Lake Superior where it joins the St. Mary's River. This drop prevented boats from passing through. This reddish sandstone lines most of Lake Superior's southern shores and is about 1,000 feet thick. The Fairbanks Scale Company, which is still in business today, built the first permanent lock, State Lock. Number eight, the toll was once 3 to 4 cents per ton. From 1885 to 1881, this was the toll, but today it is free.
That's good. 400 cents, please.
Number nine, the propeller is from a former steamer. The propeller in Sioux Locks Park is from a steamer named the Independence, which exploded just northwest of today's locks. One crewman is said to have survived a trip down the rapids on a hay bale from the ship.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the Sioux Locks.
Yeah, interesting facts all around.
Yeah.
Like you were talking about the sandstone on the south shore.
Mm-hmm.
Most evident when you get to like pictured rocks and all that.
Rocky
south shoreline.
It's a
beautiful part of the country. Yeah.
I
know there was something else you said that I wanted to circle back to, but I forgot it. So go on.
Okay. Standing 210 feet above Sault Ste. Marie and the Sioux Locks is the Tower of Spiders.
Yeah, Tower of Spider Webs.
Nope, that's wrong. Tower of History. Wah, wah. This is another favorite of mine, despite the thousands of spiders that are in and out of the building.
We visited during spider breeding season.
Blech. It gives a 360 view of the city, the locks, and Canada. And yeah, there were so many spiders. Oh my gosh.
That's where the webcam that I have on my computer is from, the Tower of History.
Like, oh, really?
On top of the Tower of History, yeah. But it's always controlled by, like, you could find it, Google, it's Extreme Time Live, Sault Ste. Marie Locks, Sioux Locks webcam. But it's always under control by some, like, avid, like, freight fan. You know, so it's like you just, you know, want to see what, like, things look like, you know. Like, when it's fall is coming around, you're like, let's see what the fall colors look like. Let's just bring up Sault Ste. Marie and you look at it. Now, there's some guy following, like, the little tugboats along the river, like... Or following like the supply ships along the river, like seeing where they're going to and all that. I mean, that's great. Some people really love that stuff.
That's
funny. I like it. Some people love it.
Yeah. So from the SioUxHistoricSites.com, The Tower of History was built in 1968 by the Catholic Church as the Shrine of Missionaries. Mm-hmm. The shrine was meant to be a part of a larger complex that would have featured exhibits about the early missionaries, such as Bishop Braga. A community center and a new church were also planned. The church later cut the project in favor of other endeavors, and the Shrine of the Missionaries was donated to the Sioux Historic Sites in 1980. It has been operated as a Tower of History ever since.
That's, yeah. Sometime we should think about this as a show, and not to endorse any religion. I mean, I'm not a Catholic. I know you don't practice, but there's so many cool little like Catholic shrines around Michigan and mm-hmm. like little like roadside things. Like when you mentioned Bishop Braga, there's I think it's out by Ishpeming. He has like a little like roadside statue, and it's coolest looking statue. Like, you know, it's like in a roadside park, where it's kind of like made to look like him floating in the clouds.
Oh,
like it's kind of like this big sculpture. And apparently the day that they were first putting it up, it caught fire. So there's all these pictures of this, like you could find them online, of this flaming Bishop Braga statue.
What?
Very, very spooky looking, but the whole thing is a very cool looking little shrine that they built.
Yeah.
That's all the way out by Ishpeming.
Huh. I didn't realize that. So the Tower of History, as I said, is really cool. It was originally for telling the stories of early missionaries, but has since begun including history on local and Native Americans. So we saw a lot of really cool things in there when we went. Beaded moccasins, bags, canoes. Yes.
Sort of that display of what early life looked like in that area.
Yeah. And it's a cheap date. So it only costs $8.50 for adults. And then kids are $4.25 for anyone between the ages of 5 and 17.
And it's all you can eat if you eat spiders. There were a lot of spiders. That's all we're saying.
So many spiders. If I ever went back in there, I'd have to wear like an emergency poncho.
Yeah. I'd just bring a can of Raid in.
Yes.
In my cargo shorts. Smuggling a can of Raid.
I didn't realize that you can buy combo tickets to the Tower and the Museum Ship Valley Camp, or the Tower, the Museum Ship Valley Camp, and the River of History Museum if you want to check out like multiple attractions in the area.
Yeah, I feel bad that we didn't see the Valley Camp. You know, sort of that I think you know, we're like, oh, it's just a basic tour of a freighter. We've already seen one of those, but it's like inside, it's a full-blown museum on the inside too.
Didn't we go into the gift shop though?
I think so, yeah. Like we walked in and then I think tickets were like $20 individually at the time or something. I don't know. But for some reason we're like, we'll pass on this one. But now I wish we didn't. Maybe next time I go, I'll check it out.
Same. Did you know that you can rent the entire tower for an event?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What event is that? Killing spider? Never. Okay, enough of the spiders.
I guess
it's a cool attraction.
It's something like $400 for like 3 hours or something like that. And I'm not sure like what sort of event you would have in there, because it's literally...
The fireworks. That's what you'd rent it for.
Oh, that would be cool.
Yeah.
Just be up there and watch the fireworks. It's such a weird... I don't know, like when you think of an event space, you think of something like long and wide.
You think somewhere where like weddings could, you know, people could dance at. You really can't dance.
Yeah, there. And this place is like narrow and tall.
But do you get the rest of the bottom too, don't you? You don't just get the, there's kind of like space down there for, I don't know, a meeting of sorts.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's an option anyways. And then the hours of the Tower of History actually change based on the season. So if anybody's looking to go up there, I would definitely just get on the old Google machine and check out what time they open. Because winter hours are shorter than summer hours. So, and then the last thing on my list of cool things, and you've mentioned it, that we didn't actually get to go inside of. Not that we didn't get to, we just chose not to for whatever idiotic reason. Now we're both kicking ourselves in the butts. The Museum Ship Valley Camp. So this is a Great Lakes freighter with a 20,000 square foot museum with over 100 exhibits to check out. One of them, of course, is an Edmund Fitzgerald Memorial and exhibit. Mm-hmm. There is an hour-long presentation about the sinking of the Fitzgerald that you can see. And then there's also two of the lifeboats that were torn away during the sinking of the ship that are there on exhibit. So there's also aquariums in the museum where you can see a bunch of fish from the Great Lakes region, and you can check out the cruise quarters and see how sailors lived and worked on the ship.
Yeah, the Valley Camp, also...
Oh, I'm sorry.
If you're there, oh, sorry. Also, if you're there during spooky season, they turn it into a haunted house.
Do they?
They do.
Oh, man. I wish I would have known that.
Well, you know, for this year now.
There's always this year.
Yep.
The Valley Camp was first launched in 1917 in Ohio. At that point, the ship was called Lewis W. Hill for the National Steel Corporation. In 1955, she was sold to the Wilson Marine Transit Company and renamed Valley Camp. In her time on the Great Lakes, she hauled iron ore, coal, grains, and stone. Valley Camp's last voyage took place in 1966, at which point she was decommissioned due to problems with her coal-burning boilers. This is from Wikipedia. Valley Camp stretches 550 feet overall with a 525-foot keel. She has a beam of 58 feet and a depth of 31 feet. Her gross tonnage capacity is 12,000 gross tons. The ship was powered by an 1,800 horsepower triple expansion reciprocating steam engine, which she retains to this day. Never the flagship of the fleet, her quarters were Spartan yet comfortable. The crew's quarters are lined with wood trim and equipped with simple bunks. The wheelhouse is lined with wood and trimmed by brass. Her original steering wheel is in place. In the stern, her original smokestack, including her double chime whistle, are still in place. Almost unmodified from her original configuration, she is the most intact example of the classic Great Lakes ore carriers that once numbered in the hundreds, and a few of which survive to this day.
Sounds luxurious.
Yeah.
Also, it's crazy, really cool. 500 feet. Like, you know, you got ships out there. What year was it decommissioned, did you say?
1966.
Okay, yeah. Wow. I mean, that's a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
It's 50, almost 60 years ago.
And she traveled she was first launched in 1917. So about 50 years she was on the Great Lakes.
Yeah. And I mean, now, you know, with the freighters that are up to 1,000 feet long and all that, I mean, that's just a little guy on the lakes.
Yeah. But 50 years, I don't know, 50 years seems like a long time to me, especially to have all of her original stuff. Yeah. Like, is that like a normal lifespan for a freighter or a ship?
I don't know. I would think so. I mean, most of these ships, you know, they don't pop them out every year. I think it's anytime like a new ship goes onto the lakes, there's like one every several years. Like, I don't think it's not a common thing. So these ships are built for longevity.
Yeah, I guess so.
Like there's what's it, the Arthur Anderson that was on the lakes with when the Emma Fitzgerald went down. That ship's still on the lake.
Is it really?
Yeah. Did it get a name change though? I'm not sure. Anyway, it's Yeah, I mean those ships are built to last and maintained. Well maintained.
Yeah, they'd have to be for sure. Yeah. So that's all I got in the Sioux this time around.
All right. It's a good primer.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm bummed that we didn't check out the Valley Camp. Like, I can't remember the reason why. It seems weird that we didn't. I do remember being in the gift shop. Yeah. I remember looking at it, but for some reason... But if I remember correctly, I think I wasn't feeling well when we were up there either.
No.
And so I wonder if that was part of it, is that I just didn't feel very well and it was time to head back and rest.
Yeah. And I think at the time, I didn't think it would give us enough bang for our buck. So I think that was kind of the thinking. And this guy was thinking, and I was wrong. Yeah. And let's not forget, you also got a casino up in Sault Ste. Marie and you got fudge.
So much fudge.
Yeah.
So much ice cream. Did we go to the casino? Yeah, we went to the casino.
Yeah. Yeah.
We lost.
I know, I've been there before, yeah. Don't have much luck.
Casinos are not kind to me.
No. So.
Yeah, so that's the start of the Sioux. I definitely want to explore a little bit more of, like, the real like history of it, just because it's so interesting, but it's so overwhelming. It's like, where do you start, and how do you summarize that sort of stuff, you know? I'll figure it out.
I mean, it's going to be a multi-part episode. More things to dig into for the future.
I suppose you're right.
Indeed.
Indeed. Alrighty, well, that's the show.
All right.
Thanks for traveling to the Sioux with me again, Marty B.
Hey, no problem, Angie. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I have no idea what the next show is going to be about.
You know what? Surprise me. Surprise them.
I'm surprising myself at this point.
Whatever it is, I'm sure it'll be another barn burner.
I'm sure it will be. Thanks for the vote of confidence.
No problem.
Awesome. Well, everybody out there listening, thank you so much again for always coming through. Our downloads are, the numbers of our downloads are going up again, and I'm so thrilled to see that. I love it. If you feel so inclined and would like to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, that'd be amazing. I love reading reviews on there. Even the one that said I giggle too much.
there you go again.
Point taken. If you are interested in calling and leaving a voicemail, that would be awesome as well. The phone number to do so is 313-489-0739. I will play your message on the air on the episode if you don't mind. And then if you want to send us an email, you can do so at greatlakesconfidential@gmail.com. And of course, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram.
All right.
I think I got it all.
Sounds right.
Awesome. Well, you guys have an awesome week. Thanks again, Marty, for hanging out.
Anytime.
And watch for deer. I saw like four of them on the way out to, we did the Walk for Wishes yesterday morning and was driving down Beach Daily near 10 Mile, and a mama and like three, they didn't have spots anymore, but they were definitely fawns, little babies, not little, little babies, but you know what I mean? I think she had three of them, and they were crossing the street in front of us. So definitely watch for deer.
Yeah. My boss just hit one 2 weeks ago.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I guess it's right. The season.
Yeah.
They taste delicious though.
Get on it.
Anyways, be safe out there. Watch for deer and text us when you get home.
Bye.
Bye.